Live from the I-10 corridor, it's the Dave Nemo Show.
Dr. Robert Schwab is a physician executive with an interest in the roles that stories play in illness and healing and how the humanities can improve medical education. That's a topic that's near and dear to my heart as well. In addition to writing and speaking on these topics, he teaches an undergraduate seminar at the University of Texas at Dallas. He's published poems, actually continuing the tradition of William Carlos Williams of Poetic Doctors, stories and essays, and writes and performs songs about healthcare. His first novel, Holy Water, explored the impact of the French Quarter, my stomping grounds, on a young physician's professional development. Backside of a Hurricane, his second novel, is about fathers and their children and the wisdom of sitting still when chaos swirls around you. Boy, we got a lot of people listening who understand that particular thing. He currently lives in Dallas, and you guys can find more about him at robertschwab.com, and that is S-C-H-W-A-B.com. Good morning to you, Dr. Schwab.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate everybody listening in.
Oh, thank you so much, and it's great to have you on. And like I said, it's a topic near and dear to my heart. I often find that people who kind of cut themselves off from the humanities and from their skills as poets and painters and musicians often find their world not only a little bit less rich, but find themselves not as professionally sharp as well. You actually embrace that kind of attitude with a vengeance. You're out there not only just writing and doing that creative element, but you're also singing songs and you're also kind of embracing the world around you. And it's really particularly important right now in both regards of what we've been going through over the last year, but also in regards to your book, Eddie's Boy. Let's kind of start with that and kind of throw us into the premise behind this book and how it just kind of begins with a fateful day, particularly at an age when a lot of people are beginning to consider the second half of their life. Your main character sets off on a journey he doesn't expect. Tell us a bit about it.
Right. Well, the main character is Landon Ratliff, and as you mentioned, he's in the book, he's turning 40, which is a big event in most people's lives. I can barely remember it now, but I do recall at that time it was a big deal. And he's a physician who, you know, identifies himself first and last as a physician. And on his journey, as you say, he is suddenly thrust into the role of a patient. So the caregiver becomes someone who needs care. And so it explores that dynamic. What happens when caregivers are the patients? Because for all of us, illness or injury is a huge story in our lives. And it's primarily huge because it robs us of our essential self. No matter who you are, when you're sick, you're not yourself. And so this looks in depth at what happens to a physician and their personal and professional identity as they navigate through a serious health problem.
You know, one of the things that's so kind of – and I'm going to try and give away as little of the book as possible while making people want to read it as well. It begins in such hyper movement. I mean, it really begins in the sense of like, you know, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to jump in the car, I got to get a meal, I got to get – and all of a sudden, bang, and we are literally – thrown into a world of limited movement and isolation and micromanagement. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but the book really, in this kind of marvelous way, allows us to take each painful step back to recovery. And for so many of our listeners who are so used to rolling trucks into places where help is so desperately needed, they find themselves in the same place. And one of your areas of specialty is really dealing with what happens to caregivers when they're the ones who need to receive care. When did this become a point of interest to you, and how are you able to kind of communicate that thematically while telling a good story?
Yeah, it's been an interest of mine for years and years. You know, I've always felt like the humanities, which, you know, the term itself means, you know, studying what it means to be a human, is a very profound thing. And I've always been attracted to the arts in general and literature and music in particular. And I've found those things to really feed my soul, and I always felt like they made me a better doctor because I could better empathize with all types of people and understand the struggles they were facing. So it's always been an interest of mine, and as I began writing, and I've been a writer almost as long as I can remember, but I I became a serious writer after a particularly tough year in which both of my parents died and my infant son was critically ill. And ever since then, I've been, you know, exploring these things and trying to relate them to my own personal situation as a physician. So it was sort of a natural outgrowth of that. And my first book, you know, looked at what is a young physician, what are the influences on the development of his professional identity. And this next book with the same main character, I wanted to look at more, you know, what happens mid-career. And it occurred to me that one of the profound things that happen to you as you begin to age is that, you know, illness begins to sneak up on you because we all experience it. So it grew out of that. And then as the pandemic unfolded, it looked like I was a fortune teller because, you know, obviously I started this book, I believe, in 2016, long before I could even imagine a pandemic. But as the pandemic came, it obviously had relevance to what we're going through right now because so many caregivers are facing the prospect of being sick.
By the way, guys, if you're just tuning in, Dr. Robert Schwab is joining us. The name of the book is Eddie's Boy. You know, and as I was kind of going through it, I got to the halfway point, and I remember there was a quote from William Carlos Williams, who I mentioned earlier, of course, the poet who also was a pediatrician. He had a quote that your book reminded me of: "The better work men do is always done under stress and at great personal cost." And so much of this book is about this great work that he does, that the doctor at the center of this, the doctor patient at the center of this, is forced to do work on himself. And there seems to be something that kind of percolates through the book about the idea that given his inability to move, he then has to begin to do the internal work he has put off because he's been so driven in his career. And there seems to be a suggestion that maybe before it gets to that point, we should do that work sooner rather than later. And I'm talking too much. Go ahead.
No, I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, I deliberately want, you know, I very much want readers to recognize that the main character, Landon, is very emotionally isolated. Even though he's a very good physician, he is emotionally isolated by various factors in his life and family and past. And so this is very uncomfortable territory for him. He's put in a position where he really has to look deeply at himself and who he is and figure out, how am I going to navigate through this illness? How am I going to do that? Because I'm not who I think I am. So it's a very, from a fiction standpoint, it creates a very interesting dilemma for the main character. How is he going to do this? That's his quest, and that's really the essence of the story, is what's he going to learn along the way? And I hope people, you know, find it satisfying as they reach the end of the book what he's learned.
You know, one of the thematics you play with also is the idea of balance, the idea, you know, we should be competent in what we do. We should be driven to be the best in our profession that we possibly can be, and we should live up to the ideals and the oaths that we take and the associations we belong to. At the same time, you talk about the idea of people being mindful and doing self-care and also being willing to give up. I don't mean give up in the situation, but give up and allow others to kind of take care of them at times. That balance also is something that you strive for in the book. So we're talking about not just – you've got to, like, track his recovery. And you have a certain, you know, insight, because you understand the medical profession, to be able to kind of technically track his recovery while at the same time tracking his self-improvement and his actual physical journey across time and space. Can you talk about, as a writer, how you're able to kind of create that musical balance, making sure that each one of the notes gets played in the proper sequence, so that we're always understanding that we're moving through time and space, we're moving through recovery, physical recovery, but we're also moving through emotional recovery? Did that question make any sense?
Yes, no, and it's a hard one to answer, but it does make sense, and it's sort of the essence of the writer's craft, I think. And the more I write, the better I get at it. So if you go back to my first book and then you read this third book, I hope you'll think, gee, this guy's gotten to be a lot better writer. But that is the fun of it. It's enormously fun for me. And I began my formal writing career thinking I'd be a short story writer, only to realize that I wasn't very good at short stories. But I loved novels because of their breadth and their complexity and the way you can weave different storylines together. And you know, if you ask me how have I learned to do it, well, I have taken writing classes, but I think I've learned more of it by reading. And I read a lot. I read a lot of fiction. That's my preferred genre. And I like fiction because I think fiction touches us emotionally to a greater extent than nonfiction. And that's part of the narrative structure, you know, the exposition and rising tension and climax and falling tension and resolution. You know, that really touches the emotional areas of our brain, and we can prove that scientifically. And so I like fiction because I think that stories are the way we make meaning out of things in life as human beings, and that's what I'm trying to do. I'm really trying to touch people emotionally more than intellectually. So you weave it together, and you write multiple drafts, and you write till you're sick of the story almost, but you write it and try to weave it together in such a way that you'll take a story up to a very critical point so that the reader wants to turn the page and find out what happens, only to take them to some other part of the story so they have to wait. And that's part of the fun.
I've often heard that, you know, one of the best explanations for suspense I ever got is the withholding of information to the point of almost unbearable, but not going so far past it that the audience gives up because it becomes ridiculous. So basically, you are suspending the revelation of information for as long as you possibly can to keep those pages turning. So you brought up two things, and I'll ask both questions in sequence and answer them how you want to. The first of which is, you talk about reading a lot of other people. Are there any authors in particular that you gravitate towards that really kind of do it for you, number one? And number two, can we kind of then segue into the idea, because we're dealing in a time right now where so many first responders, whether they are nurses or doctors or people working on the front line who were so used to helping, find themselves in a powerless situation of getting sick. And can you talk a bit about your focus and emphasis on that as well, and how people can actually kind of What kind of skills can be necessary to kind of help people cope through these very trying times?
Sure. Well, the first question, which writers? I mean, I have so many writers that I love. It's hard to say, but I will say of the sort of classic authors, I like John Steinbeck, and I like him primarily because of his enormous sympathy for the common man. That resonates with me very well. So I've read almost everything he's written, and I go back and reread. My favorite two novels of his are Cannery Row and Sweet Thursday, and Sweet Thursday is the sequel to Cannery Row. And they're very lighthearted comedies, and I just love them. I think these characterizations are incredible. For a more modern writer, I really like Amor Towles, who wrote A Gentleman in Moscow and Rules of Civility, and I like both books enormously. I think he's a wonderful writer. I love Larry McMurtry. I think he's a master storyteller. So there are a lot. I could spend the rest of the time telling you who I like to read, but I read as much as I can. In terms of the how do you navigate through these difficult times as a caregiver, I think it's enormously difficult. I liken this period of time to being in quicksand, where you know, you're stuck, and if the more you struggle, the deeper you sink. And so I think that what people have to rely on is their colleagues. We're all in this together, and as we pull together, we can lift each other up. I think the most important thing is to keep a perspective on the other things that matter in life. So your family, your friends, if you're lucky enough to have children, just look at them. They'll tell you what's really important in life. I think it's very important to take care of yourself, so exercise and sleep. Despite the fact that it's very tempting to jump into alcohol as a way to get away from this, I think that's a huge trap. I'm a drinker socially. I've really cut back on my drinking during the pandemic because I saw it as a trap. I saw it as something I could fall into and it would become dangerous. So I've really avoided it. Not completely, but I've been very, very careful about drinking. I think if you have spirituality, turn to that. I personally am a meditator, so I meditate a lot. There are counselors out there if you need them. I've used them during the pandemic and found them to be enormously helpful. So I think it's all the usual things of taking care of yourself in a time that is unlike anything I have ever lived through, and I bet almost everyone on earth would say the same thing. I really hope my children don't go through something similar, but I fear that they will.
It's interesting, too, because I couldn't have asked for a better kind of summary and explanation of a lot of what percolates through the book than by actually having you talk about all the ways we can kind of take care of ourselves, because so much of what you mentioned actually become either points of resistance or points of opportunity that allow your doctor at the center of your book to actually move towards his final destination in regards to being caretaker, reaching out to people who we're related to, mending fences, allowing ourselves a moment to kind of reflect, moving away from the potential of abusing substances, being patient with ourselves and those around us, and it really kind of plays through. By the way, speaking of Steinbeck and Canary Row, one of my favorite lines of all time is, "The world was once again swimming in greased grooves." I've just never gotten over having read that. It's just one of the best things I've ever read. And it's funny because you mentioned Steinbeck, and the first thought I had before you even said it was that vast well of empathy and sympathy that he carries with him as well.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So as you kind of work your way through this, you have you have a vast resource of your own personal experience to draw from when creating these books that you write, whether it's a young physician or somebody hitting that 40 milestone. Can you talk about how much of your life experiences that you have when you're, working as a doctor, working as a lecturer, and you say, "Man, that's kind of fantastic. I got to use that someplace." How much of your own life do you draw, and how do you play around with it to get it in there without kind of, making it a Romana Clef?
Yeah, I think every writer is an observer of life, and maybe to a fault, and I think that's certainly true of me. I think I have spent much more time observing life than participating in it. So I'm always kind of watching, and my family's gotten used to this, and they kind of chuckle at it. But I at a cocktail party, and cocktail parties tend to terrify me, and I sort of sit in the corner and watch people, and I think, how am I going to use that guy's nose in a character? Or, listening for something somebody says and saying, I'm keeping that one. And all through my books are little things that my wife has said or my kids have said or somebody, a friend, has said, and they'll read the book and call me up and say, "Hey, I remember when I said that." And so I'm always listening, and I generally have pen and paper close by, because if you don't write it down, you'll forget it. So it's there, and some of the experiences of my own life end up in the book whole, exactly the way they happened. But the books are not autobiographical. The characters are not, the main character is not me. He shares a lot of my characteristics in terms of being sort of a loner and those sort of things. But I put a lot of good and bad things in him that are not in me. And so the events that the main plot of the story are not things that have happened to me, but sometimes they are things that I think, well, what if I had been in this situation? My first book, Holy Water, really came about because of a visit to New Orleans, and I was so captivated by the French Quarter, and I thought, how would my life have maybe been different had I come here as a young man? Because I didn't really visit New Orleans in any depth until I think I was probably about 40. So I found myself thinking about that, and it grew into a story. So there's elements of my life, and there are things that I've observed all through it. And, I've been to the French Quarter probably half a dozen times, and I've gone specifically to walk around and observe, looking for things to put in that book. So, some of it's deliberate. You go looking, and every setting that my book is in, I have visited. And most of the time I have visited specifically while writing the book to capture details, because I think details put the reader in the spot. So it's there.
By the way, if you'd have stuck around New Orleans, who knows, you might have ended up a doctor who actually writes about lost people after the Korean War, like Walker Percy. It's a tradition, man. It is a tradition of people who work in the medical profession. Actually, the ones who find that balance often find their way into kind of rearranging the world and making it work in much more fictional and enjoyable forms than often the nitty-gritty of the daily existence of it. Let me ask you this final question. We got about 3 or 4 minutes left here. In regards to the famous thing, the saying of how do you get a happy ending? Well, you get to a happy place and you stop writing. Do you know where your destinations are taking you when you begin these books? Are you an outliner, or are you the kind of person that lets these worlds kind of take you to whatever destination they might bring you to, and then go back and reshape what you have?
I'm not a traditional outliner, so I don't outline the whole book and then start writing. But I generally start with an idea of the beginning and the end, and I need to know the end so I can write to it. And it sometimes changes. The end doesn't always stay the same, and the beginning almost never stays the same, because the beginning is so important in order to pull someone into the story. So I end up rewriting the beginning over and over and over and over, even though the sort of the general idea of it is there. But in terms of outlining, I typically will start with the beginning and start writing and write various scenes and thoughts. And then when I feel like I'm getting a little stuck, I'll stop and make a rough outline of scenes and issues and complications and things that I want to do. And then I'll go back to writing. And I often ignore the outline, and I often go all over the place away from the outline. But the outline helps me at least stimulate my brain again if I feel like I'm stuck. So I outline some, and in every book I've written, I've had an outline. I'm not enslaved to it. I don't stick to it religiously, but I need to know the ending of the book. Until I know the ending, I can't really begin writing in earnest. I may write scenes here and there, and I may sketch out things that I want to put in the book, but until I figure out the ending, I really can't start writing.
Well, I got to tell you guys, if you get a chance, you should really check out Eddie's Boy. It's by Dr. Robert Schwab. And, of course, we absolutely love having you on. Can you tell people where they can find the book and how they can get more information and make sure that they make it a part of their lives?
Sure. You can get it on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. You can get it at the publisher's site, which is Warren, W-A-R-R-E-N, publishing.net. And then it'll be available in bookstores around the country as we go forward. We're gradually getting them into bookstores. Barnes and Nobles around the country are beginning to pick them up, but they don't do it en masse. You have to approach them and get them to order the book, but they're doing it. And I love independent bookstores. So if you have an independent bookstore that you're attached to, please go in and ask them to order Eddie's Boy by Robert Schwab, or send a note to me on Facebook or on my website at robertschwab.com, and I'll contact the bookstore and ask them to stock it, because I think independent bookstores are a treasure for the literary community, and I support them strongly.
Dr. Schwab, it is a pleasure. Whenever you get something else cooking and something else coming out, to keep us in mind and show up here and tell people what's going on with you next. Thank you so much for spending time with us this morning, and happy writing and happy healing.
Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure for me, and I appreciate all your listeners.
Thank you so much, sir. Hey, guys, phone lines are going to reopen at 615-292-6366. Dr. Schwab actually touched on something that's near and dear to my heart, and something we do on the weekend show all the time and try to do with the Sleeper Cab Library, which is keep your connection to humanity by encouraging you to participate in the humanities, whether it's as an active reader or a writer or somebody who actually makes haikus or somebody who actually spends a little time doing some painting. You got to make some plans. You guys aren't going to drive to you're 75. You're not going to be like Jerry. You're not going to be out there on the road till you're 75. Some of you actually have a retirement plan. Wouldn't it be nice to have a humanities hobby, whether it's reading, listening to reading, writing, journaling, some form of the humanities to keep you in touch with your humanity? Well, Until then, the phone lines remain open now at 615-292-6366. Sid is over in Ocean Springs. She'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to talk to you.